T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by the law offices of Jeffrey M. Leving.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
For me, it's my timing, my approach, and the trust that I have in the pitcher. I'm seeing, like I say, I'm seeing the ball good. Even that I struck out 4 times last night, I was seeing the ball good, and I was on the fastball.
We know that we don't really have a big margin for error as a team. So it is really, really important that we're really, on both ends of the floor. The ball's got to be moving around. I thought we got really stagnant. I thought we had a hard time getting to offense. And then defensively, we're going to help each other. We got to rotate, and we've got to play with some physicality. And we didn't do those things at even remotely close enough or high enough level.
I think everything that needed to be said was said between periods as far as how we needed to respond in the situation we were in. We have a start like that and go down 4-1. You got to give credit to our guys that we didn't quit at that point. We found a way to manufacture one and then use that energy to keep going.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. There were post-game comments all over the place. You heard the Cubs' Javi Baez. You heard the Bulls' coach, Billy Donovan. And you heard Jeremy Colleton of the Blackhawks. And again, the Bulls, a disaster. Cubs, a huge win. And what a comeback by the Blackhawks. That's the storyline today. That's the kind of news of the day. They stay alive, David. They beat a team they hadn't beaten all year, and it took overtime, but they came back to do it, and what a glorious night for the Blackhawks.
Absolutely it was. 3 goals in 2 minutes, 51 seconds. You saw Brandon Hagel with the game winner in overtime. When there were 10 minutes left to go in the third period, it was 4-1, and you're like, oh my gosh, how are they going to get out of this hole that they have dug for themselves, and it would be very unlikely to have seen that happen. And they come back, and for the first time in 34 years, the Hawks rally from a 3-goal deficit with less than 10 minutes to go in the third period, and they win it in overtime. Credit to Jeremy Colleton for getting his players to play at a high level and not give up and find that resolve. It is easier, as you pointed out, with younger players trying to prove something. But these Hawks keep coming at you, and they are fast, and they played fierce, and they did what they needed to do. It's nice to see guys like Vinny Hinostroza on his second tour through town make an impact quickly, because when they got him at the trade deadline from Florida, you wondered what kind of shape he would be in mentally, physically. You knew he would be fast, and he made a difference last night. And so this is a young Hawks team. You hope they can finish finish the job now, get into the postseason. Could be a tall order, but they have an opportunity because of what happened last night.
Momentum is the next day's starting pitcher, is the adage in baseball. What do you take away in hockey? Is there momentum if you've lost a season series to a team and then suddenly you beat them and you got one more game and you need to beat them in order to keep the playoff dream alive?
Hockey can make you look silly projecting, you know, things like momentum. I like to believe in it in terms of hockey because it is a sport where, you know, the terms we throw around a lot, like urgency and effort and intensity, especially urgency, they matter. They seem to matter more because hockey is effort. It's about coming out, you know, and establishing a tone and playing at a pace. So I do think there is a possibility to carry it over to Friday. I also think it revolves around confidence. And so if you're talking about Malcolm Subban in goal, if he gets the opportunity to continue to play it for a fourth straight game, and I think that he will, because I think you ride the hot goaltender as long and as far as he will take you, then I think that matters. What he did yesterday in recovering and stopping 36 shots and giving his team a chance to come back, I think he takes that confidence into the net on Friday, and the Hawks will benefit from what happened, especially early when you need to get off to a good start.
When we sit here as we pick these things apart, you know, obviously the White Sox don't play today. It's their off day. They had a game yesterday. They got rained out, or snowed out, I should say, in Cleveland. So they get a two-day break, and then they come home to take the Rangers on. And we'll talk about this tomorrow. But do you have a sense of, you know, baseball is the next day's starting pitcher? Do you have an idea of how the starting pitching is going to be put together and how it will go in this series against Texas for the White Sox?
Well, I think if one thing we have learned in the early stages, I guess we're 3 weeks into the season now with Tony La Russa, is that there will be things that are eyebrow raising, kind of curious decisions, maybe a little bit unorthodox still. Maybe he goes that route and he skips Dylan Cease. We talked about it earlier. I could understand that. I think you make a really good point when we talked about it before, Mully. Dallas Keuchel's a veteran you trust, and you go to him and you say, okay, this is a situation. Everybody knows the situation. If you come back on Friday, you're pitching in the rhythm that you're used to every fifth day. Do you want to do that? Or do you want an extra day? Do you need an extra day? How do you feel after the last start? These are things that are unknowns that we're not privy to. If he does want to go on Friday, if he wants to, you know, stay in rhythm, you do it. You skip Dylan Cease. You get him a bullpen session. You work on things. You say, come back next time stronger and better. And you let Keuchel go, and you trust and you know the knowns, and you ride Dallas Keuchel against Dane Dunning.
Yeah, that is fairly obvious, I think. You know, you let him make that call, just given his status as a veteran player. I hate to say this because I'm not treating guys with kid gloves, but I do worry about him having the back issue at the end of the year last year. You want to make sure that he holds up, that you do everything to keep him going and putting together these starts. You know, Lance Lynn being down, I need that information, David. I need to know if he's just missing one start, if he's back again. Is this going to be extended? We know that is Adam Engel expected to be back off the injured list for this game on Friday? I think he was at one point. Is that holding up? We haven't heard anything about that.
Well, it's been very, very quiet. I think he, I don't want to say suffered a setback, but here we are. Yeah. It's April 22nd today. Happy Earth Day. And I think that didn't you think Engel would be back by mid-April? Wasn't that the original prognosis that
Well, he did suffer a setback. He did. I mean, he said that he did suffer a
but
setback.
How bad?
In his return. I think they said the last time I heard anyone talk about it, it was Rick Hahn saying that he was expected back for the Texas series. He was expected to be back and available when they got back off the road trip and they started back at home. Now, I haven't seen that anywhere. I'm sure it'll be reported today one way or another. We'll find out if he's going to be available on Friday. But there's part of me that is like has been waiting for this and hoping to get to full strength. You know, we haven't talked at all about Aloy's down. We all know that. And we've talked about some power numbers as a result. You know, your mean Mercedes has been a godsend, and so that's erased some of those concerns. But when you look at left field, you know, Billy Hamilton's out. I know no one cares about that, but you're down three outfielders, and to get one back is a huge thing, and it's a very necessary thing, and I just wonder how that will change what they're going to do in terms of trying to get Andrew Vaughn at bats. I mean, look, David, Andrew Vaughn is not a designated hitter. I mean, when we've seen him, he's either been a left fielder or a guy that can help out at first base, and he made a great defensive play at first base. I don't know how you're lining up your outfield, and I think it's a very interesting, not dilemma, but question as you try to figure out, could Andrew Vaughn move down to the minor leagues when that gets up and running just because you might not have a spot for him? Or do you think
a very real possibility. It's got to be a very real possibility, not because of necessarily as a punitive thing, but you did not expect going into the season to have Yermín Mercedes emerge to the degree that he has. He has your four longest home runs of the year. He's proven to be a very good two-strike hitter. He's better than you thought he would be at this point. You knew he could hit. You didn't know he could hit like this. So you get Adam Engel back to a team that needs to shore up defensively. If Adam Engel is healthy, then what role does Andrew Vaughn play? He's not going to supplant Yermín Mercedes as the everyday DH. He just isn't. That wouldn't make sense. And he doesn't make sense to hang around as a defensive option or replacement at first base if you wanted to use him there. Get him at bats. It's not the end of the world to send a prospect down to bring him back if Mercedes begins to falter. These are options you have, but I also think that the caution you speak with in regard to Engel is wise. Mully, I mean, step outside. It's not exactly the ideal temperature to come back from a hamstring injury. They will have to consult Steve Stone to find out what the weather's going to be tomorrow, because if it's going to be cold, I'd tap the brakes a little bit on bringing back a guy with a sore hammy.
I like it. I like that response, David. I hadn't even thought about the weather and the kind of unseasonable cold that we've been going through and how that affects a guy with a hamstring. And it's a really interesting point because, again, you're never going to have ideal conditions for everybody, but you certainly want to be aware of it when you're talking about a guy that has a hamstring injury. I like it.
It's supposed to be 80 on Tuesday, okay? Summer comes in April. That would be an ideal time to get loose, stretch it out, test it out, put him in left field. But I don't know that I would mess around with cold weather and in getting somebody his first action of the season coming back with a tender hamstring. That's an invitation for a relapse. And with a guy who's already had one setback, you don't want to create a situation ideal for another.
We haven't talked. We got to touch on the Justin Fields information that came out yesterday. The idea that he has epilepsy and apparently has been dealing with it, has been on medication. It's a very serious problem. I'm not making light of it in any way, but we have seen other players in the NFL succeed and have great careers. Alan Faneca, I did not know he had epilepsy. I don't know that epilepsy is this kind of mystery disease that it may once have been. I think that there's a lot more understanding of it. And, I read yesterday that Samari Roll, when he had it, it went through different types of issues where he had different attacks, and that is scary stuff. I don't know how big a fan you are of the band Joy Division, but the lead singer, Ian Curtis, ended up committing suicide on the eve of their actual first trip to America because he had epilepsy, and I don't know if you remember that band, but he had this bizarre way of dancing, and it was part of it was having these epileptic fits, and he couldn't control the disease. He ended up killing himself, and then the band became New Order, which was like a dance band from the 80s and 90s that became very popular, but they had been this sort of kind of different type of band because he was this artist type. And in England, they had a bunch of people that ended up committing suicide like in connection to him. It was this mystery. No one understood that he had epilepsy. He had actually written a song called She's Lost Control about watching a woman have an epileptic fit. And this was like this big problem in his life. There were other issues. But my point is the mystery of that disease was not understood at all. We have so much more information and we look at it completely differently. And I really hope that this doesn't affect his draft status. We've seen him maybe fall or be questioned as much as any quarterback in this draft.
But not because of that, I don't believe. I think that he has proven that you don't know, I suppose, and maybe, you know, if you overstudy it. But I think he has proven that this is something he's dealt with since he is a child. He has been medicated for it. He has not seen the symptoms increase. They've decreased. It is not something to dismiss at all. It's something that, you know, I don't want to compare it, but, you know, remember when Jay Cutler dealt with his diabetic condition?
Yep.
It was something that he had to, you know, be open about, and he had to process and deal with. It didn't affect him necessarily. There's always going to be that concern, but Justin Fields is being open about this, and the fact that he has succeeded at the highest level of college football without it being an issue, and he has managed this, would give you confidence that he's going to be able to continue as the symptoms decrease, as the doctors and medical professionals say that they will as he gets older.
All right, we're going to bring in our guy Dan Pompey next. Dan's going to be a big part of the coverage here on The Score of the NFL Draft. We'll get a chance to talk to him, Mully and Haw, on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Dan Pompey. Dan Pompey with Mully and Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh, we love talking to the great Dan Pompey. Brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Morning, Dan.
Hey, morning, guys. Dan. Good to be with you today.
Got to tell you, I loved your Spielman Brothers story. I'm lucky enough to know Rick pretty well and get to know him when he was with the Bears. Great dude. Always proud of his brother, Chris Spielman. You know, the old joke was the guy would have 20 tackles in warm-ups. I mean, he was just a machine. and great, a really fun story. I learned a lot in it, and great to see those guys. George Payton, you know, you mentioned him, and he's now the general manager with Denver. It's just, it's kind of, you're proud of guys that you know who are doing really well for themselves.
Yeah, and it's interesting that these two brothers – who have a very special relationship, are really kind of at the top of both of their organizations' charts, and they're both in the NFC North competing against one another, kind of helping to determine the fates of their teams and maybe the whole division, you know. And you know, they go back. They're such a deeply entrenched football family, you know, the boys grew up in Canton, Ohio, and they played at Massillon, storied Massillon football program. And of course, Chris was on a box of Wheaties when he was in high school, the first high school kid ever to do something like that. And, you know, the stories that I didn't know about of how they grew up together and how they competed, and they, you know, they were always kind of at each other's throats as kids, but always also had each other's backs and really cared for each other. And that continues today. And it really is a special look at how brothers can function with each other. It makes me a little jealous that I don't have a brother. but you guys are my brothers.
Yeah.
So we're
we are. Thanks, Dan. You know, we were talking before you got on here, Dan, about Justin Fields and the revelation of how he has successfully managed epilepsy growing up and how he takes medication for the seizures that to prevent them from happening. And so he has succeeded at a high level. And I think that, you know, he comes into the league and you do wonder about what role this will play in the minds of executives who might want to draft him as high as Justin Fields is expected to go. What role do you think that this revelation will play, if any, in evaluating him as a prospect?
Well, the good news is it apparently has not affected him as a football player up to this point. I think clearly if you are a team that's interested in drafting Justin Fields, you have to do a little extra homework at this point if this is something you were not aware of up to now. And you have to make sure that the situation's not going to get worse. Now, there have been other players who have survived and thrived in the NFL with epilepsy, including Alan Faneca, you know, who's a Hall of Fame caliber guard, played many, many years. So You know, that doesn't mean that it's going to be the same for every person who has epilepsy. So I think it merits a little extra homework, but from what we have seen of him so far, you wouldn't think it would be a reason not to draft him or to knock him down on a board.
He's the great Dan Pompey. You can read him in The Athletic, and you'll hear him with our draft coverage, which is on, of course, April 29th, the first round of the NFL draft. It's going to air on WBBM News Radio 780. Don't worry, we'll keep reminding you, but we'll have Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer and Hub Arkish and Mark Grody, Chris Emma, again, the great Dan Pompey, other experts, and the coverage begins at 6:30. It'll go until 10 o'clock, and Dan, obviously everybody in Chicago is very curious about what happens with the number 20 pick. Increasingly, rumors of the Bears calling up, trying to get in, whether it be the top five or the top 10. You look at the assets they have, and it doesn't make sense that they could do that. It would cost a large booty to try to move into a position to take one of these quarterbacks. What's your thought? Do you think they're going to make a move? Do you expect that? We've seen Ryan Pace go up before, and will he be allowed to? Will he be wanting to move up to get a quarterback in this draft?
Well, I'm going to be surprised if it happens, because I think all five quarterbacks are going to go probably in that top 10. And I think that they're going to have competition for those quarterbacks in terms of other teams that want to trade up, other teams with better assets than the Bears, who are maybe closer to the top 10. So I don't think it's going to happen, and I think it shouldn't happen. I think the Bears are better off staying where they're at. You know, one of the things that I've kind of learned, it's kind of actually hit me in the last couple of days, is I've done my research and talked to all the different front office people about the draft, is that people see all of these quarterbacks very differently. You know, I don't sense a consensus on these guys. You know, specifically talking about, you know, anyone after Trevor Lawrence. So I think there's a great wide range of opinions. What that tells you is, you know, there's a lot of risk associated with these players. You know, you don't have a situation where everyone's telling you, yeah, this guy can be good. It's more like, well, you know, to me, he's a third-round pick, one guy says. And the next guy says, well, to me, he's, you know, definitely a first-round pick. Well, it just goes to show you that, you know, quarterback evaluation, as we know, is such an inexact science. And, you know, you're going to end up with some mistakes in this draft. And, you know, it's one thing if you're sitting there and letting the pick come to you. It's another thing if you're, you know, mortgaging your future by giving up whatever it is. You know, maybe it's a few first round picks or, you know, multiple picks in this draft and beyond to get up there, and then really putting yourself in a bad situation for the future if that player does not work out.
Get the picks, trades, and insight from all your favorite NFL teams by subscribing to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. It's happening now. Follow the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey on the Odyssey app. Dan, so if you're George McCaskey and everything you said is true, and about the difference in opinion of these prospects, these five quarterbacks that might go in the top 10, and yet you continue to hear things. Brad wrote about it this morning in the Tribune about, well, the Bears might be desperate enough to want to get into the top 10. Would you step in if you're Ryan Pace's boss and say, okay, we want you to be independent, but there are limits to how independent we are going to allow you to be?
Well, I think you certainly have to have a discussion. You know, you have to really, you have to have upper management involved in a move like this. Now, the fact that Ryan Pace is here making the pick, I think shows you that George McCaskey has complete confidence in him, and he's not going to say you can't do what you want to do because you might not be here next year. George McCaskey can't think that way. If he brought him back this year, he's got to think that, you know, that he's my guy and he's empowered to do what he wants to do. But I think there also has to be, you know, some long-term thinking involved that might not necessarily always occur to people at various levels of the organization. So I think that's, you know, George McCaskey's job and Ted Phillips's job to make sure that, you know, the team is well set up to succeed beyond the next couple of years. And you know, I think if you trade away too many draft picks, you risk not being set up to succeed beyond the next couple of years.
So, you know, you sit at 20. Let's say you wait. There could be five quarterbacks gone. You know, you start talking about some of these wide receivers. It's a loaded position. You start talking about offensive tackles. You may be able to get one there. The Bears could use a cornerback, although there's depth in the quarterback position, but you could get a really good one. Where would you go? Would it depend on how the draft falls? Or if you were making the decision, Dan, what would you want at 20?
See who's on the board. You know, you're picking so low that, you know, there's a good chance, I think, that a special talent is going to fall a little bit.
Yep.
You know, maybe it is an offensive tackle. Maybe it's, you know, somebody like Rashawn Slater. Maybe it's someone like Christian Darrisaw. Maybe it's a cornerback. You know, maybe Caleb Farley, if he checks out medically. You know, you mentioned receiver. You know, I think you have to be open-minded, certainly, when you're picking 20. And, you know, even beyond the perceived needs, you know, maybe look at a safety. Maybe look at a pass rusher. Maybe look at an inside linebacker. You know, there's going to be, I think, a good player at 20. You know, there is some decent depth at that point in the draft. And as you mentioned, you know, you have to probably weigh that with some of the areas that you think are really deep where you could get a decent player in the second or third round as well.
Dan, Trevor Lawrence was a subject of the Sports Illustrated story. Mike Rosenberg did a great job of getting into his head a little bit, and he had to almost issue a statement that sounded like apologizing for being too well-adjusted. And I wonder, as you look at Trevor Lawrence, obviously we haven't talked a lot about the number one overall pick, but is his personality and makeup and the fact that football isn't his 100% everything, is that something that you think anybody else besides people that are critics for a living are concerned or talking about?
No, I think I've talked to a lot of people about Trevor Lawrence, and that's never been a fear. You know, I think the one thing that kind of raises a little bit of a red flag with me with that is, you know, we're seeing more and more players, including Andrew Luck, a player that he's often been compared to, walk away from the game early, you know, especially after injuries. And, you know, you wonder if that mindset might lead him to do something similar in the same situation. You know, he's not a guy. We talked about Chris Spielman earlier. You know, Chris Spielman was a guy who said that he wanted to be playing football when he was 50 years old in the Italian league if he had been healthy enough, you know. And he probably would have been if he didn't break his neck two times. But, you know, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is going to be like that. You know, maybe he's not a guy who's going to play like Drew Brees and Tom Brady until, you know, he's in his 40s. But I think, you know, that's certainly not a reason to shy away from him, because he's a special talent, probably a generational talent, and a guy who I think, you know, you would hope could win Super Bowls with, and I think clearly the best prospect in this draft at any position.
Dan, I don't know how much you've looked at the quarterback ratings or how you feel about whether it's Kellen Mond or Davis Mills or Kyle Trask. Could someone like that be available in the second round? Would that be a better idea for the Bears? I've seen people suggest they should take one of those guys with their pick at 20, which seems like you're overdrafting, but quarterbacks are usually overdrafted.
Yeah, I think that's crazy to, you know, reach and take a guy who is not worthy of the pick based on his resume and athleticism and abilities. But I think certainly, you know, second, third round, you start looking at those guys and saying, let's bring a guy in and see if he can develop. and let's see if, you know, maybe there's some talent that wasn't shown in his college career. And let's see, you know, if he can work well with Matt Nagy and the offensive system and the players in Chicago. Because I think, you know, at some point you've got to add a young quarterback in this draft. And to me, the chances are best of doing that after you get out of the first round. Certainly you get in those, you know, second, third, fourth round range and see what's out there. You know, I don't know that there's going to be a big run after those top five guys. I think there might be a little bit of a gap between the last of the five and then the next one taken. And I think certainly, you know, you're looking like the guys you mentioned, I'll kind of be surprised if at least two of them aren't available when the Bears pick in the second round.
Wow, that's great. Dan, thank you. Appreciate it, bud.
Okay, thanks, Dan. My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
That's Dan Pompey. Don't forget, our draft coverage is on April 29th. It'll be on WBBM News Radio 780. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk to Jamal Mayers next. We're going to get into some of this Blackhawks glory because it was a glorious victory yesterday. And we'll talk to Jamal. Mullenhaw on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Gutsy comeback. Put ourselves in a pretty big hole. And, you know, obviously it's a big game. But we stuck with it, didn't give up. And so definitely proud of that response. Certainly we can do things to make it easier on ourselves, away from the puck, with the puck, defensively. But we create a lot tonight, a lot more than we have. And Subi was big for us, made some key saves at important times in the game. And a bunch of guys came through with some big plays for us to score.
Mullenhaw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's the voice of Jeremy Colliton talking about the great comeback victory for the Blackhawks yesterday. And we're delighted to welcome in Jamal Mayers. He joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park hotline on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Jammer, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Jamal.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're kind of fired up because you live to play another day, right? I mean, that was a game. We were trying to come up with some kind of a way of describing what felt like an elimination game. I mean, I know kind of a must-win type situation. It looked like it was a loss, and then they turn it around, and we've been discussing this morning how momentum works in hockey. Does that mean they now have unlocked the key to beating this team?
Well, the thing that I'm most encouraged about is that it appears as though youth is served, and clearly it was Patrick Kane's amazing pass to Kalanuk, for that third, for that goal. And you look at who assisted on it. It was Kaner and Hagel, another young player. Then next, Inestroza, who I believe is still, scratching the surface of who he will be as a player. Who assists on that? Doc. And then you look at the next goal, assisted by Suter, by Kubalik. And then who scores the winner? Who's on the ice? Hagel, Inestroza, and Doc. And so, I look to the young players that stepped up and were able to fight forward and find a way to get the victory. And as Jeremy mentioned, that, clearly they have to tighten some things up defensively. But let's not also underestimate the job that Subban did to shut the door when it was 4-1, because 5-1, I don't think you're coming back from, but he made some huge saves down the stretch.
So, Jamal, you mentioned that player development, and it has been steady all season long for all these young players. And I have to be honest, coming into the season, I wasn't quite convinced about Jeremy Colliton. I still had some questions. Maybe some of them still remain. I'm not sure, but he has proven that this team will play hard every game, it seems, almost every shift. And I wonder how much credit you give him for keeping this team consistent in terms of effort, and also for that player development with all these young guys who seem to be, taking steps in the right direction.
Well, that's a great point. I really do think him and his staff has done a great job in two respects. One, changing the way that they play. They play a more linear style. They play a more forechecking, and they've become a fast team. And not to say that they weren't fast in the past, but they played a more of a control the puck, possess the puck game than they do now. And so the adjustment under him in playing faster has been remarkable, that they've been able to do that and insert as many young guys as they have in the lineup. The second thing that I've been very impressed with Jeremy and his staff is that they've been able to do two things: allow the young players to make mistakes and continue to play them so that they keep their confidence, but also keeping them to a standard of effort that will be required. Because I think that as you go through these growing pains, rewarding intention is very difficult to do when you live in a win-now world, which the NHL is. So, definitely give him and his staff a lot of credit for the way that they've been able to do that.
I don't think there was any controversy about the idea of Malcolm Subban being the goalie in that game. Obviously, we know Kevin Lankinen, and I think it was a week ago that Colleton was saying how important he was for the season and what he had done to turn things around. But he had struggled in that first game. They took him out, and Subban came in and had, I think it was 8 saves, something like that, really did a good job. And you look at, you mentioned his performance. Is he now the guy moving forward? Is he the guy Friday night? How does that work?
No, I think they go back to Lankinen. At the end of the day, I think that, you know, Subban had the shutout. He played extremely well. My initial thought was when they pulled Lankinen that they were just resting him to get ready for yesterday's game, but I was a little bit surprised that they went with Subban. But he played remarkably well. I think the luxury is that there's a question who they're going to play, and I think that's a positive for the coaching staff, the players in the organization, and it's a testament to both goalies' ability to stay ready, in particular Malcolm's. Because prior to that, he hadn't played, I don't believe, in since March 28th. So not easy to get ready and stay in game form. And that takes a lot of mental fortitude. So a lot of credit goes to him and Jimmy Waite for keeping him prepared and ready to go. And you know, it's a nice problem to have when you're really not sure who they're going to put in there.
Interesting call. Yeah, it will be a good debate, and it is a nice problem to have because it means you're playing for something. And let's go back to the style of play thing that you mentioned, Jamal, because I think it's interesting. The Hawks are playing faster. And when they play at the speed at which they're playing in that pace, a guy like Brandon Hagel stands out. I mean, I just think you have a ton of young players who have played, I think, 8 rookies or so, and each have had different moments where you're like, oh, yeah, you know, this is the guy that I think I can project this or that for. Hagel's intriguing to me, I think, among some other guys because of just – how he seems to make an impact every time he's on the ice, and I do think he's a little bit overlooked. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think he brings a motor to his – first of all, his skating level of skating is elite. That's number one. I think his compete level and his understanding of the game and awareness defensively is ahead of his years. I think that he has an offensive – he's not a pure goal scorer necessarily, but he's going to get enough chances that – he's going to score a fair amount, and I think he's proven that at every level. I think that getting an opportunity to play with elite players is going to bring out the best in him, but I think that at a young age, he's really become a very consistent player because everything, from what I've seen, is rooted in his motor, his ability to skate and stay on it shift to shift, and that is how Jeremy wants to play. That's what's going to drive this group forward. And it's nice to have a guy that can play in virtually every situation, but it's almost he's become the kind of the poster for who they are as a group and how they want to play the game. And, you know, when he started out and hadn't really scored or contributed offensively in the first 15 games, you knew it was just a matter of time, and you feel good for a guy who gets a chance, who's stuck with it, who's, you know, works and competes as hard as he does. You like to see guys like that have success.
It was interesting to see the and I understand there's issues with the defensemen, but it was 11 forwards and 7, I think, defensemen. And I was saying to David earlier that Connor Murphy, that, you know, he got beaten on one play, which happens, but the one with the helmet was just so bizarre. He just seemed lost for a second, and he's trying to get this helmet secured, and he couldn't even see as that happened. And you thought, like, oh, my God, not like this.
Yeah, you know what? I understand the idea of the rule, and I think post-game Murph made a very valid point. And he said, you know what, and this is talking about the previous game, he said, you know what, I probably should have just took the penalty versus leaving the ice because that left the front of the net open. I think he needs a tighter chin strap, number one. Number two, I think he makes a great point that if he loses his helmet in the defensive zone, you're better off just taking the penalty than leaving the ice. And if it's in the neutral zone or the offensive zone, then, yeah, go ahead and change. But wouldn't you rather be on the kill than, leaving the ice and leaving your team short? It's not that you're just leaving the ice and leaving your team short. It's the fact that no one else knows you're leaving the ice, so they're not able to cover for you. And so it's amazing it's happened two games in a row. I imagine that Parchy will find him a new helmet or a new chin strap, or at least I think the coaches will be suggesting that for Murph going forward.
Great stuff, Jamal.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, guys.
It's hysterical. You'd hate to think that your season came down to a bad chin strap.
Well, it's just weird that it happens two games in a row.
It's bizarre.
And there was attention drawn to it after the first time it happened, even more so now. And, yeah, tighten things up a little bit, guy. Come on.
We'll bring in Dan and Layla next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.